Now, in 2012, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in Rome indicated to the Redemptorist superiors that they had some concerns about views being expressed by some Redemptorist priests here in Ireland. The one probably best known to us here in the west of Ireland was Father Tony Flannery, based much of the time in Esker in Athenry. Well, of course, since 2012, much discussion has gone into the how and why all of this happened. And indeed, many listeners often wonder, what's going on now? What's the situation at present for Father Tony Flannery, and indeed for others like him who have been silenced by the church? Well, to look at this issue, recently I met up with Tony to chat back over the past number of years and what they've been like for him, and also about his present situation and his hopes indeed as we start a new year. I began our chat by welcoming him to Faith Alive.
Thank you very much, Manika. Good to be here.
I suppose for many people they'll say the last 8 years have flown by in their lives, but maybe for you that's not the case. Your life really did take a turn years ago.
It certainly did. It was a major life change for me. I was in my mid-60s at the time, and I suppose what it meant was suddenly I could no longer do what I had been doing for 40 years. But then other avenues opened up for me. And for the next number of years, I was very involved in church reform work, initially in Ireland, and I was going around the country giving talks on church reform and on Pope Francis and that. And then internationally, I spent a few years being very involved in the international reform movement and giving talks in various countries, a lot in the United States and that. So those years were very full and active, and in a lot of ways, really interesting years, and so different to what I had been doing.
Right. Most people would feel challenged by doing something very different, but they'd like to have chosen that path themselves. The fact that this was not of your own choosing, was it difficult in any way to suddenly change course mid-60s?
Oh, of course it was. And just the whole sense of not being able to minister as a priest anymore was a big, big blow to me. And I've often said that one of the things I realised was how quickly the institution closed you out. From being all my life in and out of churches, I was no longer welcome in a church building to do any sort of public speaking. That was a very strange experience, for being so much part of the church for so long, and then suddenly I was a persona non grata in church institution all over the world.
You might describe it as strange. I mean, for me, listening to it, it sounds very hurtful. It's almost like your own family rejecting you.
I suppose it was too. I didn't sense it so much as that at the time, or maybe I was just burying the hurt, and it was so new in so many ways, and I was meeting a whole range of people, making new friends in different parts of the world, and that helped a lot. But you're right, Monica, of course it was hurtful. All the time, and I suppose I still say it, if church authorities regarded me as saying and writing things that were not correct and that could be damaging to the people, they were entitled to question me about it. My difficulty all the time was that the process they used was so totally unjust and abusive. And to this day, I don't know, I'm 73 now, but I would love to write the unjust procedure that was used on me before I die.
I've no doubt that when we talk about your experience, it's very personal to you. But there are of course, other priests too, I know, who have been silenced and censored over the years. And you always get the impression that the church, rather than dealing with it, really is hoping that you'll keep quiet, you'll disappear, and the problem will disappear. Do you have a sense that that's what they're doing?
Yes, I'd say certainly that is the case. And I've heard in the past 7-8 years of so many priests, religious, nuns, even lay people who were sanctioned in various different ways by the church. And then the church just happily forgets about them. From the very beginning of my dealings with church authorities, it was emphasized to me that I was to tell nobody. Secrecy was the main thing. Keep it quiet at all costs. And of course, that would suit their procedures perfectly. Because if I kept it quiet, and if everybody else kept it quiet, then they could easily just let people fade away. The fact that people like myself and Brian Darcy and Jerry Maloney and lots of others internationally no longer stay silent is more difficult for the church to deal with. But at the same time, I have no doubt at this stage, the church authorities, it's 8 years now almost since I was forbidden to minister, they would very happily leave it that way until I die.
Again, Tony, from their perspective, however, their structures are changing so much. I mean, when you were silenced, it was a Pope Benedict church. We're now very much in a Pope Francis church. So you wonder, has that change meant anything for people like you?
I had hoped that it would, but as of now, it appears that it hasn't. One of the things I discovered in the last, say, 18 months or so, was that the actual action taken against me was not taken by the Vatican, it was taken by the Redemptorist authorities. I wasn't censored by the Vatican. I was withdrawn from ministry by the Redemptorists under orders from the Vatican. Now, that might seem like a detail at one level. At another level, and especially for me, that was important because, in a way, it was my own that did it to me. And I would have thought that in recent years, with Pope Francis in place and Cardinal Gerhard Müller, who was the head of the CDF that I was dealing with, had been sacked by Francis, that the whole thing in Rome had changed. I would have expected at this stage that the Redemptorist authorities in Rome, the general government, would now see it as their way to restore me to ministry, since it was they who withdrew me from ministry. I'm disappointed that they're not willing to do that.
Of course, church organizations work, you know, in ways that few of us understand. But one of the things we have come to understand within the church over the past number of years, maybe even decades at this stage, is the impact that abuse can have on people. And for some people, watching your situation, it almost mirrors a form of abuse because there's a sense of silence around it, do nothing, say nothing, and wait for somebody to die. It just doesn't seem like a Christian thing to do.
Yes, of course it isn't. You're perfectly right, Monica. And I have come to know people whose health was destroyed by the way they were treated and their lives were shortened. And even I think of Father Sean Fagan, who is well known here in Ireland. Sean was so deeply hurt. I know he suffered from bad health in later life, but the treatment of Sean by the Vatican certainly contributed, I would say, both to his bad health and to his death. And I know of a number of other people internationally who certainly died quickly and directly as a result of their treatment by the Vatican. So it's actually a fairly awful regime that the Vatican has conducted over the years. And love to see it changing. And while Pope Francis is doing his best in this area, there seems to be very little movement.
And why do you think he's reluctant to deal with this issue?
He has so much on his plate. The message I get is that Francis does not deal with individual cases. And I can see a certain justification for that. The poor man has enough on his plate. But there was an example recently. It was well publicized of the theologian James Allison. He's a well-known theologian who's written a lot on the whole LGBT issue. And a bishop friend of his went to talk to Francis about him. And about a month later, James Allison's phone rang one day. And it was Francis at the end of the phone. Ellison presumed it was somebody having a lark at him, but eventually he recognised it was actually Francis. And Francis had rang him personally to assure him that all censures against him were lifted.
Tony, it is the beginning of a new year. I suppose each new year we all hope for something good in our lives. Is there any sense of hope in your life as you start 2020 that this might be the year that this could be resolved?
I wouldn't say I'd be very hopeful, because I don't see where the movement would come from. I would love if it did, because quite apart from myself and what it would mean to me, I think it would mean a lot to the Irish Church if censures, not just on myself, but on about half a dozen other priests, if all of those were lifted, it would be a great gesture of a new style of church and a new way of dealing with people. I think it would be important for the Irish people. But no, I'm not very hopeful that anything will happen this year.
Well, I'm going to ask you, if you were to speak directly to those maybe five Western bishops this morning, what would you say to them?
I'd say something like this to them, that somehow they need to do something about injustice. And if they are willing to just let injustice happen and not repair the damage and the evil of the injustice, they are not following Jesus, basically. So I would put it up to them, for the sake of all of us, that if the church is to have any credibility preaching about justice, and it is one of the big Christian issues in today's world, indeed at all times, it has to be seen to be exercising justice within its own system. And in my experience and the experience of many others, it has not exercised justice and is not exercising it now. In fact, it is seemingly happily covering it all over. And I'd say, come on, you can't continue in that way.
Well, certainly strong words, and I think words that many lay people certainly will be resonating with as well. Tony, we wish you well. We will continue to follow your story, because, as I said, many, many listeners continually ask for you and ask about your situation. So we do hope that 2020 is a good year for you. Thanks indeed for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much, Monica.